Say one. Not supposed to say one.
Blog Talk Radio.
The Man Cave. Steven Racketeer. Me. I know they can hear me.
I woke up from a memory, still lying here next to you, watching you as you're dreaming. The dreams I thought I knew, your smile shows the reason. I watched it all come true, your touch is golden dear.
I've heard that song.
Oh, no, Eddie. Are you kidding me? It's your birthday again?
Oh, Melvin. It's about your turn, Melvin.
I'll have a blue a Christmas without you.
We'll put Porky on this back burner. Welcome, my friends, to the show where I pretend don't have enough wine. This is the man cave. That's Porky. Turn it down, Porky. Simmer down. All right. Yeah, we've stumbled into the man cave. A team of voices radio. It's a Wonderland production. We are poets from allpoetry.com. We use blog poetry to share our wares. But tonight, we are every last Friday of every month, Steven 76 and myself. Tonight we have Racketeer with us. We get together and we talk about whatever we want to. Well, most times, whatever we want to. But how you guys doing? How you doing, Rack?
I'm okay.
Are you? Okay. Steven, always nice to know that the end of the month is here. It seemed like it was just last week we were doing this.
It does. It seems like they come quicker and quicker.
Yeah, how does it that the days drag on but the time flies by?
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. Okay.
Today at work, all right. It was like a John Wayne movie today at work. It was the longest day. Nobody buys fish the day after Thanksgiving because everybody's eating their leftover turkey.
You know, we had to finally talk my mom into, you've got to cook two turkeys. You know, there were six kids, five boys in my family, and my mom and dad. That turkey was gone before nightfall. I mean, and you know, and you live for the leftovers.
Oh God!
So she'd make two turkeys. Okay.
Yeah.
Set her boys up.
I think the sandwiches better than the meal. I definitely.
Oh. Absolutely. Those little dinner rolls, and you devil up the turkey. Yeah. Oh, good. Toast some bread with turkey on it. That's good too.
Oh yeah. So everybody
had a good Thanksgiving. I got to eat turkey on Thanksgiving this year. I wasn't alone. So look it up.
There you go. That's a good Thanksgiving. Yeah,
I'll tell you what. I spent 13 holiday seasons alone. Before I was able to, I was invited for some people that knew I was alone and got to hang with them for Thanksgiving. It was very nice. And then one other, in 20 years, there was two times it doesn't get any easier. Don't put yourself in that position like I did. Hate the seasons. I hate the holidays.
It's not so much
Denver knows. Denver saved me many times. I said, yeah, I hate the holidays. She goes, I know you do. I know you do. But, you know, after so long, it's easy. Plus, Monday's my surgery, my next surgery. I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, man.
So around here we have the Mercy Hospitals, right? Well, I've been in every one of them, and I've had surgeries at every Mercy Hospital in the area now.
Oh. Do you get frequent flyer
miles? Well, they knew me by name when I was in school. When I was playing football, I was there every Christmas to get my knees done. In fact, that's what I wrote about, that one, the Christmas high. Got stuck out on the ledge with a guy that worked there. five floors is up. We're on this ledge in wheelchairs. It must have looked terrible from down there, but we were safe. We were safe. Smoking a joint up there. Oh,
and same time to pull you back in.
Oh, security, when they found out where we were, who we were. Yeah, security. They didn't send the little guys or the girls. They sent the big dudes. I go, oh, we're going to be in trouble. I expected phone calls to my coach, my parents. Ah, they're going to kick me out of the hospital. But the guy I was with, he was a nurse at the hospital. So he goes, well, they're not going to kick you out. Don't worry about it. Okay. But, the world's falling apart around us, guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
We were talking before the show how we don't like listening to the news anymore. It's just, it's draining. Let me get to you. It's like that 24-hour politics station. That's mind poison.
Oh,
I know
CNN?
A lot of people are, doesn't matter. Either one. If you listen to the politics stations all year, all day long, it's mind poison. It is. It's not good for you. And I know people that do.
I hate politics.
I know. It's just so stupid. Vote for me, and I will run the country better.
It makes me relate to all the people that yell at the movie screen. Watch some of the things that these people do. You want to scream at them, and can't you? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a kick in the back of the seat.
What's real good at the screen?
What does it cost to go to the movies now? I mean, everything. To go to Disneyland, it's like $200 just to get in, plus the cost to my God.
But it costs. Well, it depends on what time you go, of course. Because Kay and I have been going to the theater a lot lately since they started these Fathom events. The other week we went and saw To Kill a Mockingbird, actually, with Gregory Peck.
Ah.
We went.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it cost us a little over $20 for both of us to go see it.
How was Scout?
Hey, if you go to a ball game, here in the West, it's you got to save up all year to go to one damn game.
I'll stick with the minor leagues; they're cheaper.
Yeah, there you go. Plus, see, I'll go to a game now and then. Back in the day, I didn't mind going, especially when they had double headers. Go down to see the Giants Candlestick, but anymore, it's just so expensive. Plus, it's better to stay home, and you got the refrigerator right there and your own little restroom down the corner. Nobody bugging you.
No line at the restroom.
I was just going to say, no line.
There you go. No line. I remember at the Kings game, Sacramento Kings, the basketball, when – they first built the Arco Arena for them, they screwed up somehow. The women's line was out the door every time I had ever gone, to where it was so bad women were coming into the men's doing the thing. So they didn't think there were going to be very many women.
Wow. Yes, no.
Yeah, I happened to be there when they come, two or three of them come walking away. We got to use the stretch. So we all stand at the urinal going, whoa, what the hell? All right, go ahead. I didn't give a shit. I don't blame them. I couldn't stand in line because that line that out the girls' restroom was close to the snack bar. this Florida State game, man, is 38-38 in the fourth. They keep tying each other. Great game.
Who scores last?
But
Kay just corrected me. Over, it was actually like $27 for us both to go see the movie. So.
Just tickets, just to get in. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
27.
Yeah.
That's not. I guess that's not too bad.
Probably cheaper, but
$10.
I like
pop.
Back in, yeah, the Saturday matinees, you get three or four movies, you can stay in there all day long for a buck. I was a kid.
Stayed in dead still. I miss you. You were talking about those doubleheaders. I missed that when I used to live at the old lakefront when the Indians played there and the big Wahoo was on top of the stadium, smiling at everybody as you came up to the gates. They used to do those Saturday afternoon doubleheaders.
Yeah.
Two games for
the
price of one. That was awesome. Even though they weren't the biggest team, it was always a great day.
Yeah, the last one I went to was at Candlestick before they built the new stadium, new ballpark, and it was with the Pirates. Barry Bonds was playing he was an outfielder. He was a right fielder for the Pirates, and they had the Killer Bees, Bonds, Bonilla, and some other guy named with a B. I can't remember. But there are the three Bs in the back, three Bs in the outfield. When we were down there, also Dusty Baker was coaching the Giants. And I went to school with Dusty and his brother and his sister. So this guy I went down with, he's yelling, Dusty, Dusty. And Dusty's ignoring him, right? And I go, you really want him to come over here? And he goes, yeah. And I go, Baker, Del Campo. He turned around, looked at me, walked right over to me. High school we went to.
Sid Bream.
Ah, is that it?
Yeah.
That's all right. Okay. One thing. Have you heard the rumor or the possibility that this cryptocurrency?
Oh, God.
Yeah, the Bitcoin thing. I had heard this guy say, now the name that created, and it's a name, it's a guy's name, but they're not sure if it's a dude or if it's a group of people under that name.
Yeah.
That has uncountable Bitcoins in their account, but it's never moved. So it's stayed in one place, no, it wasn't being used. They said that if whoever has access to that floods, starts working with it, it will kill the Bitcoin, and everybody's invested in it. It will just destroy it, the account, the whole system. And I said, you know what? This is what I thought. Our government doesn't have their finger or their hands in on the Bitcoin, so they're trying this e-money. They want to just now when FDR. Asked the American people to hand in their gold and be handed these pieces of paper as dollar bills. That was tough for some people to understand. I'm giving away gold for a piece of paper with a picture on it, you know. That's what the rumor is that they're going to do. They're going to devalue the dollar so much, so bad that they're going to say, well, trade in for this e-currency that will be like on the Internet or in the air. So, but they will be able to shut off your money anytime they want with no reason You have nobody to go to complain. That doesn't. Then I got this thought. Well, you know, maybe they are the ones that sabotage the Bitcoin. So the next thing is the e-money or whatever they call it.
Well, the Bitcoin has nothing backing it. It's you know, it's
right.
Digital. It's just zeros
yep.
and ones. It's not like the dollar that has the gold or whatever
yeah.
the Federal Reserve backing it. So, you know, whatever money you have in Bitcoin is basically, if they decide tomorrow to say, you know, we're not going to take Bitcoin anymore, then that's it. You know, well, whatever
yeah,
you spent,
whatever
yeah. you invested is gone.
Well, that one guy, he said that there is uncountable Bitcoins in that guy's under that one name. And he goes, you know, if he starts moving this money around, this Bitcoin stuff, it's going to destroy the market because it's like what Hitler did. He just started printing money. That's why a loaf of bread back then was like 100,000 marks or something. You can't do that. It collapses your economy.
But what can you spend Bitcoin on? What can you use it to buy?
That's a good question. I have not gone down that rabbit hole yet. I think you can trade stock. I know that's one thing, you can do stock with it. But in saying that, if it's not backed, who allowed you to purchase with Bitcoins? That doesn't make sense to me, but I don't know. Like you said, Black, if it's not backed or federally protected, you're setting yourself up for a fall. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how it's going to work, but man, if our government controls our money by a flip of the switch, can shut it on or off, we're in trouble.
Well, I don't think it's any different doing it digitally than saying, you know, okay, tomorrow your paper's worthless. We're no longer taking the bill,
yeah.
you know, that we're retiring it.
Well, there were some individuals that, now I don't want to get political here, but I don't know how else to say it. if you weren't on one backing one party and they knew you were the other side, they came in for this one. He owned a gym or a 24-hour workout, a gold gym or something, and it was on the East Coast. They went in and they went into, I think it was a Wells Fargo, and froze his account, $200,000, to where he couldn't. Oh, that's what it was. He wouldn't close his business because of the COVID. He kept his business open, so they punished him by freezing over $200,000. He couldn't pay his couldn't pay the lease for the building. He couldn't pay his employees, all because he didn't do what they said. Now that seems a little too much Big Brother to me. He was screaming and yelling, well, you know, you can't do this. But he had nobody to go to. Who do you go to? Sheriff ain't gonna do nothing. Mama ain't gonna do nothing.
Can't do anything.
Well, I don't know. It seems a little scary that even that theory or that possibility could happen, that they're going to go away from our currency. And I don't see that happening in the near future. Do you?
No.
Yeah,
no. I think it's an extreme thing that,
they had no problem printing about $100 million for the Ukraine. So I guess they could do it. I mean, must be serious.
Unless they print $100 million for me.
I'll just take one. Just 1 million. Send me on my way. I won't say a thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I will get curious on this, and I'm going to find out what's the possibility of that happening. Because a lot of people are scared to death, and they're trading everything in for precious metals, you know, silver and gold, platinum. Like, that's going to be a little hard carrying around with you, but I don't know.
If somebody wanted to borrow silver, at least I know, you know, whatever it weighs is what it's worth. You know, the price may fluctuate, but you know, it's got value. You know,
that's
undeniable.
Yeah, one time I purchased 10 South African Krugerrands.
Oh, okay.
They're, you know, ounce, each one was an ounce of gold, and they were mint. I bought it, was like, I got them in cases. They weren't, never been touched, so they were mint. When I went to, I bought them when gold was at $630, I think it was, an ounce.
Nice.
And the guy that said, he goes, now listen, when it hits 1,000, sell it. Okay, so it hits 1,000. I wait. Then it hits 1,100. Okay, maybe I should hang on to it. Then it goes back down, and it freaked me out. So I sold it. Wrong thing to do. I wish I had those Krugerrands now.
Yeah.
But I made a pretty penny. I made a pretty penny on it. It was a little fun to look at.
You know what you do now? I learned it from that show, Young Sheldon. You go pick up all the gravel on the sides of the road, and then you sift it for all the platinum that's in it that comes out of the catalytic converter. Never even knew there was platinum inside a catalytic converter, but there is.
Well, it out here in California, we have the Black Buttes, which is between the Diablo Coastal Range and the Sierras. They are extinct volcanoes. They're not the Cascade Range, which Mount St. Helens is part of. They're still active. But nearest me, it's a Black Butte out in this flat land. The bird sanctuary is up I-5 corridor. Between the two ranges, you can see this big black mountain. That's the Black Buttes. It was so violent, I guess, when it last erupted, that all the precious jewels, the precious stones that it does create were shattered. So they got diamond bits and rubies and emeralds and all this, but they're tiny. They're all shattered. The rumor is up at the buttes, you can find veins of them, but Black Butte is a protected Indian reservation that I guess you can get a lot of trouble and maybe not make it out of there if you go sleeping around the Black Buttes nowadays. Well, we used to hike up there when we were kids. Now it's like, anyway, the stream beds, the river beds are just littered with emeralds and diamond bits. So if you go gold panning, that you can see them in there.
Yeah.
They're not worth anything. One of the biggest emeralds ever found, this kid, and it was in California, Northern California. This kid was hiking with his dad, and he came across this big, odd-looking rock. So he asked his dad about it. Dad didn't know much about it. He carried it home. I don't know how long they had it, but they took it to the university. It was a emerald. It's like a freaking 12-pound emerald or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
diamond, Panther.
Yeah, the diamonds. When I get to Australia, and I will get to Australia, I'll be in the gold fields. That's all I want to do. I just want to be in the gold fields. Every time I hear somebody, another 64-pound nugget found by a kid, you know, in Victoria, I go, I got to get down. That's mine. I call AP. AP, they found another one of mine. And I go, well, he said, I want to find a little nugget. That's all. He goes, well, if we don't find any, we'll buy some. I love you, AP Taylor. Yeah. No, I get this last surgery done. I get on the rebound, the mend, and as soon as I'm able to get around, I'll be heading down there. It's amazing that it's been over 2 years when I got my passport and we were looking for the window to fly me down, and that's when the COVID hit.
Everything shut down.
Yeah, I told AP, I said, there are forces at work that do not want me to go to Australia. Look what they did.
Do those same forces want you to look in the studio and see if anyone's on the phone?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, darn. Thank you. Thank you. Let me go. Damn, thank you. Here I am. No, just us.
Okay.
Just us.
Maybe I should. I don't think I have to refresh. No, it's click and time. Yeah, we're good. So, mentioning Dusty Baker, he ended up being the manager for the Astros, who won the World Series. That is like Dusty Baker's fourth or fifth World Series ring. Good for him, Dusty. I remember the day Dusty Baker was the first graduating class at the new high school that I went to. And he graduated. He was a lot older, 9 years older than me, I think. And but his little brother, Vic, who's not little, he was 6'11". And
no.
Tanya, the sister, were more my age, especially Tanya. One day, we used to be given the key to the gym during the summer, so we could show up early and go into the gym and play basketball. And we were there early one, I want to say it was a Friday. And we walked through the door, and Dusty Baker walks in and comes up. He wants to, you know, get into the game. So we start playing, and the next thing I know, balls pass over to me, and I look, and there's, I'm guarding Dusty Baker. Oh, my God. I'm a track baseball football guy. I'm not a basketball dude. Sort of out of my element.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, I'll do my best. So, but when I got to the other end of the court, somebody threw me the ball. Who's guarding me? Freaking Dusty Baker. I'm throwing balls up like you wouldn't believe.
shake and bake.
Anyway, good guy. His dad, who passed away, John, God rest his soul, was a very nice man. He was the chaperone for my son when my son was the traveling all-star team when he was the senior league. He was the youngest. He was like 2 years younger than the other boys. My youngest kid was very talented. And so John, took care of when his mother couldn't go with him or I couldn't go, John Baker would take care of my kid.
Very like nice six man. Degrees separation.
He was a good guy. The whole family was very, very nice, especially Dusty. I had to tell Dusty, too, that when we were down, I thought I saw him. I go, I apologize to him. He goes, what for? And I go, well, you were a Dodger and Giants fans, you know, and Dodger fans. He goes, oh, yeah, I got you. I go, then you came back and played for San Francisco, so everything was fine. He goes, okay. He didn't forget where he came from. Let's put it that way. He's a good guy. It's good to see him get another Woody World Series. Another thing I read in the news, I read it on the internet, got to be true. they have been studying the octopi, right? And mainly just to see why they can so quickly change the texture of their skin, the color, the camouflage, just instantaneously. And in studying, they found that the genomes in their DNA, there's 50,000 to where a human has 25,000 genomes, I guess, about it. So an octopus is more complex than a human. And they just found this out. I don't know why it was just now they found it out. But the only answer is if we were planted here from an alien comet or somebody planted us here on this planet. They did the same thing, but that one landed in the ocean, and it's the octopus. There's nothing on this earth that has the same structure in the DNA like the octopus. That's weird.
I think Stephen will tell you a pound of octopus is more expensive than a pound of human.
Yeah. I don't know what an octopus's octopus's garden was.
In the shade?
Yeah, it was.
Octopus's garden is outside their lair, wherever their little den is or thing. You'll find clam shells, crustacean bits and parts. That's an octopus's garden. In the shade. Yeah.
you know the record for solving a Rubik's Cube was almost held by an octopus?
What?
No lie. If you Google octopus doing a octopus and Rubik's Cube, it was like, I don't know, 6.5 seconds or something crazy like that. And it's
no
only
way. Really?
Look.
An octopus did a Rubik's Cube.
The octopus did solve the Rubik's Cube and did it almost as fast as a human. The world record. Not even just almost as fast, almost under like 7 seconds, something crazy like that.
If you had an octopus that could do that, you'd be rich. Come look
at
my freaking
It's out there.
So how do you think he learned to do that?
It's fascinating. It really is. I mean, I used to love watching them, you know, when they went inside the bottles and the jars they unscrewed inside and the craziness like that. But when I saw them do the Rubik's Cube, I'm like, that's it. I'm done. I give up.
I got to see that.
That's unbelievable.
It's like when they were that one kid from TED, you know, the technology, engineering, design, TED Talks.
Uh-huh.
This guy built a vending machine. It wasn't electronic. It was something. It was a 3 or 4 step thing that they could plunk something into a slot. And it would throw out some feed for them.
For the crows,
It didn't take the crows, but I don't know how the time was. If I tried to state, I'd be wrong. But it didn't take him no time at all. What he did was he one step at a time, he would put these little wood coins or whatever to they put in the slot. Put in the slot, it gets a light goes on, and one piece of food comes up. But he did it. Kept adding it to it. Pretty soon there was a 4-step vending machine. These crows had no problem putting the coin in the slot, pulling the lever.
Crows, I think that it's called the corvid. They actually teach each other.
Corvids,
when one crow learns it, when one crow learns it, he teaches the other crows. I think it's called the crow box and a project.
Well,
that's on YouTube also.
Yeah, they've done studies where they don't forget either. They had students come out in England with the ravens. They had students come out with a mask, and they would treat the crows, the ravens, bad, or they were, and these crows remembered this mask. Another student would walk out with another mask and would feed him. Years later, they went back and walked out, and the crows remembered. They attacked the guy with the one mask on.
What I find more fascinating than that is they actually know the difference between the instant gratification, like you're talking about the vending machine type concept. If they have a machine that gives out their favorite feed, and they'll put the coin that opens the box to give them that feed next to something like lesser that they don't like as much, they'll actually choose the thing that'll open the vending machine rather than the immediate piece of food right next to it, because they know that they know with the other one they get the better food.
You know, these people that have raised crows and ravens and have studied them in depth for long periods of time, they say that every other animal on Earth, they will watch you, what you're doing.
Yeah.
They will study you. They'll stare at you. A crow, he looks at what you're looking at. He's not looking at what you're doing. He's looking at what you're looking at or what you're So he's learning, if that makes sense,
There's another video of, I think it was in Japan, the crow learned enough that he actually flew into, I think it was a bus station or something, and stole a credit card to swipe it I don't remember what it was, but he knew enough to steal the credit card to use it to get what he was after.
They're smart enough to where there's, you know, they're pack rats. They like shiny things. They'll take, you know, but they have crow's nests have been known to have jewelry, dollar bills, coins in the nest. It's quite amazing. They after the TED Talk, they went from like number 9 in the animal kingdom's intelligence to number 3.
Wow.
Just in one big jump. It's flipping amazing. There's a video out there now where these two cats are on two different roofs, and they're growling at each other, right? And in between them, bouncing from roof to roof, is this crow. And he goes over there and he starts antagonizing this one, forces him to jump off of the roof he's on onto the other one, and these cats start fighting and then fall off the roof onto the ground. The crow follows him. Crow's down there hopping between as these two cats are fighting. He's getting a kick out of making these two cats fight. It's bizarre to watch. This crow follows him on and kicks the cat off the roof, gets in the fight, then goes down. And I mean, he's not a foot away from these cats. Just watching it, just antagonizing. Yeah. No kid. The crow that they watched pick a piece of wrapper or a leaf on the top of the roof and slide down on snow. He'd slide down the snow to the gutter, then pick up the leaf and go back to the top, put the leaf down and ride it back down. That's amazing. Damn. I want a crow. And I'll tell you what, we would go bird hunting on the farm, but I can honestly say I never shot a crow. I shot blackbirds, but I never shot a crow. Thank God.
Don't say it the raven.
In California, we have ravens and crows. In fact, there's ravens and crows around here. You can tell by the way they call. Their tails are different. The ravens are a little bigger. The beak's different. So you can tell the difference in flight by their tail feathers. And their call, a crow caws, and a raven gurgles, does that gurgle and knock thing. You can tell the difference.
If I'm not mistaken, they also learn to imitate other bird calls.
Well, they don't use it per se. I think the mockingbirds out here and the magpies. When I was a kid, the magpies were by the millions out here. But all the orchards are gone. Most all the pastures are gone. So besides the monarch butterfly, the magpies and the crows aren't around like they used to be.
Heckle and Jekyll were magpies.
You know, my mom was so funny because when we were a kid, we had a crow that had one foot. He messed up on one foot, so he would hop in the yard, right? And we'd watch him. I don't know how many years later, 25 years later, my mom, there was another crow out there hopping. And she goes, this crow, it's the same crow. Like, Mom, that was like 25 years ago. I don't think it's the same crow. She was sure it was the same guy, same one.
It could have been, I think, because I know some birds are very long-lived.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't tell her she was wrong and everything, because my mom was going through the beginning of the second stage of dementia, Alzheimer's. But it's like when I was 30, I think I was 38, or I could have been 40. No, I was over 44, like 42 or something. She grounded me. She came up to me with that look in her eye like I was 17. She goes, don't think you're taking that car. And I go, what? She goes, don't think you're taking that car. I go, Mom, are you grounding me? She goes, yes. So I handed her my keys. I go, what did I do? She just walked off. Next day I walk in, I go, Mom, am I no longer grounded? She just looked at me and smiled, nodded her head, yes. I let her ground me. I don't know what she was thinking, but I didn't want to leave her.
Most crows have a life expectancy between 4 to 7 years, but there is one that they knew of that lived until 59 years of age. So
no, whoa, really? Could have been the same one, though, huh?
See,
it's hopping around. Wow.
Now, you know what it is, Hatter? The crow learned that if he hops on one leg, you know, people give him treats.
Yeah. I don't know how he tucked that crippled leg of his up like he did. When we first moved up here.
He was faking it.
Go ahead. Oh, he was faking it, yeah. You know, I didn't appreciate the crow until I read the Carlos Castaneda books. The way the Yaqui Indians, when he met Don Juan, the mystic Indian.
Uh-huh.
Great. The first four books are worth reading. Blow you away what Carlos Castaneda went through. Introduced to peyote and smoke lodges. Yeah.
I put a picture of the top crow on the board. It'd be Mr. Randall Flag.
Stephen has many poem about Randall Flag.
Colonel Flag?
Randall Flag.
I'll get there. I'm getting there. I finally figured out how to not lose my blog talk tab and my all poetry. I use DuckDuck, and I use Firefox, I use Google. That's all different. Okay, here we go.
He just duct taped it.
4-year information.
Yes.
Okay, what's that picture of?
That's Randall Flag.
Oh, who is he?
He's the walking dude. He turns into a crow quite often in the book The Stand by Stephen King.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't read that book, and I didn't see the movie, if there was a movie.
There was a miniseries.
Oh, okay.
That's why whenever I hear a crow caw, I always say, shut up, Flag.
Oh, really? Yeah, there's a English lady who raises birds of prey and crows and ravens, and the crows that she has are as tame can be to, you know, to her. But very smart. She goes day to day of taking care of them, how she takes care of them. And I can't remember the dog name, but it's really funny because the crow can talk.
Oh, yeah. Say nevermore.
I'm just wondering. You wonder if he knows what he's saying, you know?
Nevermore.
There's a Simpsons bro. Yeah.
Okay, so who is going to win the Super Bowl this year? Buffalo?
I would like for Buffalo to win.
And the way you're talking, it should be the Ravens.
No, never.
I don't know. The NFC West is they're tougher than their the records. I think there's a couple divisions that are that way. So it's going to be the they have the extra wild card too this year, right? So there'll be there's a very good chance that who goes to the playoffs is going to have a losing record.
The Jets?
Jets don't have a chance. In that division, that's Buffalo and Miami. Miami's probably get the if they can't catch Buffalo, they'll be sitting in the one of the wild cards easily. Miami will be in the NFC. Jesus, the NFC. They say the AFC West is the toughest, one of the toughest. Look at the schedule. They're just it's hard to determine who is the power team because look at the Niners. They say that's one of the best defenses in the in football, but they're sitting at a 6-4 record.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. See how they do the playoff with the extra wild card. It'll be interesting.
I always think back to the early 90s. When Jim Kelly was the quarterback for Buffalo, and they had Thurman Thomas in the backfield, and they are constantly going to the Super Bowl and constantly getting their asses handed to them by the Cowboys.
Yeah.
One of the main reasons that I hate the Cowboys.
Was that when Tom Landry was coaching
them? I think Landry was coaching for a couple of them, I think,
Yeah, back there it would have been Landry. I don't know. I'm more upset about these halftime things, these halftime performances. What the hell? I don't even know who those people were. let's see. Oh, yeah, this fantasy football that Deborah got us into, having a good time. I was doing good. I was in second place, trying to catch Gress, and then I beat Gress by less than 3 points, but I lost two in a row, so got my ass handed to me. it's sort of fun. It makes you really pay attention to all the teams and who they're playing. My roommate, Joy, we talked her into it. She didn't really want to do it. Didn't know she was going to have fun. Boy, she's all fantasy football now. She's in second place.
Oh, awesome.
Well, she's a Miami fan. She's a Miami fan, so she's living high. Miami's had a good team this year. I am going to, we've got to do the, what day is this? The national calendar. Today is Friday, November 25th, in the year of our Lord, 2022. Today is your welcome giving, National Native American Heritage Day. It's also your National Flossing Day. Did you floss today? National Day of Listening. Yeah, like that's going to happen. And Maize Day. Maize Day, that's like Corn Day, isn't it? Buy Nothing Day. This is Black Friday, right? Day. Friday. Next one. Shopping Humor, National Play Day with Dad.
Aw.
Yeah. But this is the end of today, so let's look at tomorrow. Tomorrow, the 26th of November. Small Business Saturday. And National Cake Day.
Ooh.
Cake. Yeah.
Let them eat cake.
And have them eat cake. You too. That's right. Now.
What's your favorite cake?
Well, my favorite cake? Oh, carrot cake's pretty good.
I like carrot cake. Yeah.
Yeah, good carrot cake is killer. Some of these ice cream cakes are pretty good.
Yeah, the ice cream cakes and Big Queen, all those.
Yeah. I tend to, I don't know. Yeah, I'd go carrot cake. Carrot cake's probably my favorite.
Yeah, that's right.
The, there's a bakery a couple towns over, Cake White Frosting from there. That's the ultimate cake of all time. That's just the best.
White Cake White Frosting.
Yeah, my mom used to decorate cakes for weddings and birthdays. So she had all the character pans for kids, but she would make these wedding cakes. And we were all put on alert. You know, there was do not touch this, do not open this. And it was very strict. But she would do the five layer wedding cakes. And we would all, if she had to have like 500 roses or had 200 leaves, we all knew how to make roses and leaves for my mom. It was sort of cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
And she'd get these big 5 gallon buckets full of frosting, the white frosting.
Fondant.
Yeah.
That bakery that I was talking about, they were very intricate with their artwork, whoever decorated the cakes there. I remember when my son was little and he was really into Lord of the Rings. And the one year we had Gandalf cake, and she did such an excellent Gandalf. I swear, like, you'd see individual strands of hair in his beard on this cake.
Nice.
It was so
weird. Yeah, it gets really involved. I remember the magazines and the books my mom had.
Yeah.
You could go in and give you, you know, if you wanted to do a certain character. And she did. She must have had 24 pans that were Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, Barney, the dinosaur, you name it, she had it.
Porky Pig.
I don't know if she had a Porky Pig. Huh. Yeah, there's pretty good money in it. Yeah, my mom made extra money. You know. But
my friend's wife did it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
She's in New Jersey. You have to have a commercial kitchen, otherwise it's illegal to sell a cake. If it got pushed through or not, the home baker's bill or something like that, where they're trying to push that through so that you can actually have a commercial kitchen in your house that you can legally sell wedding cakes and things like that. But she's got pictures of some of the stuff that she's made that are incredible. She's a sugar plum baker or something like that was her website. But she did some incredible. She goes by Grace of Cakes. she was on those shows. What was the guy's name? The guy that did not Cake Boss, the other guy. He was from Boston. And then they had that whole circuit where everyone was like competing with each other to make the cakes.
They have that show.
Duff Goldman. Duff Goldman. He's an incredible baker. He made some great cakes. I used to love watching.
Yeah, I remember that. They got pretty elaborate with some of the. It's like it reminded me of the Sandcastle guys.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do that. Try it. I mean, but then these guys, they haul in their own sand.
Gotta
be the right consistency so that it can mold and it'll stay.
Some of the artwork you see with that sand that they do on the beaches is just amazing. And it's all just going to get washed away when the tide comes in. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to say about these artists that do sidewalk art and the castles, because it is temporary and it's going to be washed away, you know. But I can see it being more of an issue back before they had cameras in your phone. Now, right now, I get to take a picture of it. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Live on in your memory.
Okay, let's see. The most, hey, have you ever heard of people chasing a cheese down a hill? Cheese rolling?
No.
Cooper's Hill, cheese rolling. Every year a cheese wheel races down a steep hill in the English countryside at more than 100 kilometers an hour. That's not completely harmless for the audience, but nothing is compared to what the contestants go through trying to catch the cheese. Ouch. I've seen those guys chase a thing. And I'll tell you what, that thing's like, you know those wheels that they sharpen? They sharpen your tools with, they get it spinning, you know, the old way you sharpen it. That's what they look like. Maybe not that big around, but I'll tell you what, these guys chasing the cheese down the freaking, the way they're catching it, they're going flying down. When we talked about the Battle of the Oranges, they got that city instead of the tomatoes in La Tomatina. It's a Battle of the Oranges. You can get hurt with an orange.
Yeah.
Well, people had helmets on and masks and, yeah. 20,000 people.
Freeze power before the game.
20,000 Italians get together for this fight and have a great time. 120 tons of tomatoes.
Nice.
You get 20,000. You get 20,000 Americans together, you're gonna have a riot. Yeah, that's let's see. The most bizarre festivals. Now, out here we have the Crawdad Festival in Lodi, California.
Ooh.
Yeah, crawdads. They say you suck head and eat tail. Eat the tail and you suck the head.
Bite the head. Suck the head and bite the tail. Is that it?
Suck the head and bite the tail.
I haven't had crawdads in a long time. They're good.
They're real. Yeah.
They are.
I'm actually taking a video right now of the cheese rolling. I'm checking it out.
Yeah.
I want to
yeah,
pop
they,
for that now.
Can you imagine one of those cheese rolls going chaotic and you ended up in the crowd? That'd take somebody out.
Yeah, some of these guys are like rolling themselves.
Well, they fly down that hill. It's like they got to get to their cheese. It doesn't really count or something.
What? Oh, damn. What?
Yeah. I don't know where it is, but it's like they use couches and chairs, recliners, fly down this hill. And they still show that one video where there's three guys on this couch. I mean, they got a lot of wheels or something. They're flying down this, and it goes airborne. And you can tell there's no way of stopping this thing. It's going way too fast to get down to the end of the hill. Finally, it throws the guys as it approaches the camera. It looks like these guys are traveling about 60 miles an hour. And they go slamming into the dirt to the other mountains. Damn. That was whoever thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Potato Day Festival.
You know what that is? The most famous last words in the world, right? Hold my beer.
Do that, you broke.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Oh, that's the redneck creed. I wanted to be accepted by my older brother and his friends so much. I would do anything, my older brother would do it. I figured anything my brother would say he could do it was safe. Yeah,
right.
No. But my brother would go, my little brother could do that. What? You're right, you can go do it. Sure, I'll do that. Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah. I'm lucky to be alive. Oh, that shit.
My little brother can eat a ghost pepper.
Yeah, you know, that's these people that trick people into biting those. Are you with them? What if they are allergic to it? You don't have time to get them to the hospital. Someone's gonna get hurt.
Well, the oil is enough to blister your skin.
It'll blind you if you get it in your eyes.
Yeah. The food shows. One of the idiots. That was like the one challenge that he failed, and then he was stupid enough to go back and try again.
Really?
Yeah. The guy that did Man vs. Food, Adam, whatever the hell.
He did
the ghost pepper.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He couldn't do it.
Yeah, I wonder how that guy's. Does he still have his show on cable? Man vs. Food.
I don't know. But somebody had pointed out, if you watch like season one and compare it to like season, you know, whatever, you can see the progression of him getting like dumber and fatter. He's given these eloquent descriptions of how the food tastes and dances on your tongue and this and that. And at the end, he's like, yeah, that was good.
when we had cable or satellite TV, that's one show I would watch. He was
nuts. Doing it. I believe his doctor told him that he had to stop, and then they started a show called Man vs. Food Nation, where he trained other people to do what he doing. And I don't know if that's still going or not, but I used to watch that show too. I gotta hit the hay, guys.
Okay. All right.
Nice to see you.
Thanks, Steve. Why don't you tell us what's happening over at your
shop
that's going on? Anything special?
I know tomorrow night is Sky's show, Storyboards with S. Dark Holman. She's looking at the movie called Home for the Holidays, which starred Holly Hunter, Robert Downey Jr., and Charles Durnan. It's a pretty good movie. It's a funny movie. Quote writes, character writes, you know, the usual kind of...
It's the value of why, at the point where a graph is not...
Turn it off. All right, yeah, and tomorrow we have our Hatterday Saturday. Other than that, I can't remember. I'm waiting to... we're going to do the next music show, the next vacant day that I can grab. I'm going to do the rock bands and do Christmas songs. There's a lot of them.
Cool.
So,
Happy Christmas.
Coming up. There's some good ones.
All right, you guys.
All right. Yep. Sleep well. Tell the wind hi.
I'll be up.
See you.
Okay. Yep. All right. See you later.
Good night.
Okay, we're back in tour. We got since I'm in the in the studio, I'm gonna make sure there's nobody waiting. No, just us. Yeah, there he goes. Okay. Let's see what we've got. You feel like a song? We could play a song.
Well, so I'm always down for music. Hell, I hear somebody, you know, something, and then I get the damn tune in my head. Somebody mentioned Ventura Boulevard, and you know, that verse from that song.
America?
I don't even remember.
Ventura,
I said it. I heard it.
Ventura Highway.
I heard it and now I still have that song stuck in my head, and I don't have, you know, I don't know the song by heart or the lyrics. I just have that one line that they put in my brain from the sentence that they were saying, and now I can't get it out of my head.
Is it Ventura Highway?
Or maybe it was Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, Hollywood Boulevard. How does it go? Boulevard,
I'm horrible when it comes to it.
You're talking about the Kinks. Ray Davies. Yep. That's I know what song you're talking about. I think that's
Lola?
On the tip of my tongue.
Was it Lola? No.
No, that's not Lola. No. It was a what do you call it? They used to make film out of
celluloid.
You know, celluloid hero.
That was a good song.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, the other one was Ventura Highway by America, but that's not the one I think of. And you know what? I've had that Moody Blues song in my head.
Tuesday
afternoon.
The story.
Story in your eyes, and then I try to shake it off and get that out of my head, and what comes up Tuesday afternoon?
Yeah.
Don't fight it.
That was a good song. I mean,
it is.
Something to be said. Yeah, it does. However old, you know, and I had started talking about that from the beginning, but, you know, it to me, you know, the fact that it's still out there, it's timeless. You know, there's songs that come and go and fade and like, you know, you have to almost be proud to remember them, but this is like, it keeps popping back up. Like Knights in White Satin, you know, that song is iconic. There's no getting away from that.
Yeah. There's generational songs also.
Yeah.
Stairway to Heaven is a perfect example. Losing My Religion, REM was one. I'd Love to Change the World is another. I've always said that when I did the show The Doors, on The Doors, Ray Manzarek, those keyboard little rips are like 50 years after we're gone, somebody's going to put a coin in some machine and they're going to pick the LA Woman or Crystal Ships or something, and because they're like timeless.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of them. Some I consider some of them generational songs. Some of them are iconic, I guess, are the two. Generation songs are usually spaced
like
out.
Hotel California. There's no getting away from that.
Yeah, I think let's see, you go as far as generation songs of my era, would be Stairway to Heaven would be the number one, but you'd have The Doors, you'd have, you know, all The Doors stuff. You could put
the
on
Rolling
there.
Stones.
Rolling Stones. I like the earlier Stones, Through the Past Darkly with Ruby Tuesday and
that's the movie.
Some of the
That was the Moody Blues, not the Stones.
Ruby Tuesday? No,
you said
the Stones.
Through the Past Darkly?
Yeah, that's the Stones. That's the Stones, Through the Past Darkly. You're talking about the Day of Future Past?
Oh.
Days of Future Past, that's the blues. Through the Past Darkly.
Okay.
It has Ruby Tuesday and early Stones.
Sympathy for the Devil.
Myself.
I love it. Sympathy for the Devil.
Yeah. Well, you know, my favorite Stones was Gimme Shelter.
Yeah.
Had that chick. The early Pink Floyds. Early Pink Floyds, Deep Purple. Anything Clapton and Cream did, you can list that. There's a lot of bands that have good songs that really popular. I wouldn't
Amazing.
Consider them being generational songs, you know. But that's like saying who's the best guitarist. That's so subjective. You know, for years I loved Clapton. Then I did. And I knew a lot about Jimi Hendrix, but when I did my first Jimi Hendrix show, and I was able to study him and do some, Sorry about that, Jimi. It's Jimi Hendrix is the best of all time. Always will be. It's his world, and everybody else plays in it. Clapton, Richie Blackmore, you know, all the Neil Young, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, all those guys.
Steve Vai.
Oh yeah, Joe Satriani.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's there is and I always thought I knew what when they called Clapton slow hand.
Yeah.
I thought what do you think that means when somebody calls, and Clapton hated that term. He hated to be called that. I always thought because he was fast enough on the guitar, right? Slow hand.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was a name his band gave him before Cream, because he would be the last one on stage. It would take forever for him to put a new string on his guitar. It took him forever to do this, so he was slow. He was the slow hand.
Right.
And Clapton admits that he was sort of a dick back then, but he caught himself. Yeah, it's like Bob Seger. Bob Seger did the same thing. He got to where he hated playing Turn the Page. Every time he got on stage, from the time he got on stage till he left, people were screaming, "Turn the page, turn the page," and he hated it. Then he finally came to the I don't know what happened, but something came to the realization that he goes, "Wait a minute, without Turn the Page and my fans, I'm nothing." So he reinvented himself and liked it. And he started tweaking the song a little bit, playing it different a little bit each time. But he says it was a real eye-opening epiphany of his career, that he got to where he hated being told what to play, and that's all he heard was, you know, turn the page, turn the page. But then he got to where he embraced it. And I think that's what you'd have to do. You got to find a way to like, because without the fans, you are nothing. But yeah, a lot of the rock guys, just like any other celebrity, when they can no longer go out in public without being mobbed or being harassed and stuff, they tend to hang out with each other, like the filthy rich sports guys, sports celebrities. And I think that's where they end up losing or detaching themselves from reality of where they came from. Because they can't hang with the masses.
Yeah.
You know, that they can only hang with each other. They become these elitists just because that's the human nature.
Yeah, there was an episode of Family Guy, they made fun of that, I think. It was, they had like Bill Gates and Ted Turner and, you know, I don't remember who the hell else all hanging out because they're all, you know, billionaires.
Have you seen, they're the videos of this acting troupe. And what they do is in this one skit, they dress up as Ben Franklin, George Washington. They play the roles. But they are dressed in that attire with the wigs and the whole bit. But the way they talk is like today. They're smoking weed under a tree. You know, Ben Franklin, they're joking. They're joking because Ben doesn't usually smoke, but they did today. You know, the talk is like, it's like when you were hanging out with your buddies when you were 17.
Oh wow!
And these guys are all these people, and they're talking history, but they're talking like you would with your buddies, and it's hilarious.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, they got other scenarios or other parts of history. They'll dress up in that attire of that era or that time, and they write these scripts. The one with the forefathers is the best. The way they talk about, yeah, they have Benedict Arnold there. You know, he was before he was a traitor. He was one of our generals.
Yeah,
and they keep hinting that. When Benedict Arnold would show up, You got to see it, because I try to describe it, I won't do it justice. But the short little, about 12 minutes long, 15 minutes long. Some of them are hilarious. Yeah. I forget what the name of it. He just says, acting troupe does the Forefathers. I think he'll bring it up. And a whole series of skits they do. Pretty funny.
Oh, man. What would really be funny is if the acting troupe was, like, Canadian.
Hey. I miss bugging Lady A. I remember we were talking about building. She was getting. I was teasing her, so I said, "You better ease up, Lady A. We're going to build a wall along the Canadian." And she starts laughing, and I said, "Well, yeah, we already started last weekend. We were up there." She goes, "Yeah, you built the wall." And I go, "Yeah, we used popsicle sticks, a little glue, and one. So we just laid a log across the road that keeps the Canadians out."
See?
They're just so polite.
They hang up a do not enter sign.
Yeah. Are you sure you want to take this trip? Yeah, I guess Canada's having their own problems too. The whole world is walking on the ledge right now. Yeah, we gotta have common sense. Somebody's gotta have common sense. Quit with this freaking 1% of 1% of the population, and you're making policy from them bitching at you. Got no balls, man. Just
That's
say
crazy.
No. Yeah, just say no. We're not doing that. But it's not my world. I protested mine when I was young. I'm going to watch it. What the young people do. It's not my world anymore. Can't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'll be gone by the time the next president is voted in, probably.
You think so?
No, maybe two or three. I'm getting old. Getting old. Time to hang her up. Now go to Australia. If I survive Australia with it, when everything from the trees to the bugs to the animals, everything can kill you.
Trying to kill you, yeah.
Yeah. I can see the headlines, California man dies from not knowing a platypus was poisonous.
the heel spurs, yeah.
I saw this show yesterday. It was about an island. And these iguanas had to make this gauntlet run. Yeah, with the snakes.
Wow.
I've never seen snakes. The iguanas would run up from the shore, and they would hit this one part where the dirt and the rocks, they had to get the other side up on the rocks where their family was. The minute that iguana freaking hits the sand, These snakes come out of everywhere and chase it, and they just grab onto them, and if there's enough of them to stop them. I've never seen snakes chase something like that. And fast. It was the thing of nightmares, man.
Yeah. Snakes are wild.
God. Well, it reminded me of the brown snake, one of the most poisonous snakes in the world down in Australia. It's the one with a bad temperament. It will chase you across your front yard, AP said.
Yeah.
So I guess I got to be able to move out of the way.
Either that, or you get the stick with the Y on the end, you know, that you could pin them to the ground.
I just carry my machete around with me.
Oh, there you go.
I ain't running. Come here. Yeah, just to get out and see kangaroos.
You come back with a nice set of boots.
Right. Yeah, I guess AP's got a whole itinerary all set up. When I make it down, he's going to show me his country. Yeah, it is. I got everything squared away.
Don't let him talk you into eating the Vegemite.
I've already trained. I've already done it. face
oh.
it.
I'd be down for just about anything, but don't give me the – I don't want Vegemite. I'm not – no.
It's an acquired taste, I guess. Yeah, you can keep that.
Yeah.
What I found out about – I've been doing a lot of Google Earth down around Victoria, Melbourne in Victoria. That's where AP's at. But, you know, Sydney, certain parts, I knew the west of Australia was a rough country. It's there's not many people, and it's a rough place to live. But I always thought Queensland was more of the cattle, you know, more cattle, more farms. Queensland has the Komodo dragons on the shorelines. Oh. Queensland has their tropical forest where they have the most poisonous animals in the world, and that's where the kookaburra, the bird that'll it's the big one with the purple blue eyes and whatever, purple eyes, red eyes. Yeah, so Queensland's not a mellow place to be. It's got Komodo dragons on the beach. You've got white sharks in the water. You got birds that'll kick your ass, and everything else that'll bite you. So
snakes and spiders.
Yeah. Oh my. Yeah, I'll be in the south of the country in Victoria, Melbourne.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And seems like a very central. Not far from the ocean, not far from the. In fact, the whole of Victoria is a gold field. That's where the most gold. The biggest gold was found. Was found in Victoria. The AP told me, he goes, "Yeah, I've never met anybody that talks about gold as much as you do." I go, well, it was a dream. Yeah, since I was a kid, I always said I wanted to go to Australia, not knowing. I just picked a place. And as I grew up, I figured. Yeah, I figured, well, that ship sailed. I missed it. But, you know, didn't get a chance. And then I meet AP Taylor, and he goes, "Why don't you come on down?" Yeah, be right there.
Next time he comes to the States, you take the flight back with him.
He's gonna fly me down. He's gonna fly me down because he'll already be there. When he travels like he does. It's like it would be hard for him to plan to be in L.A. where the one big company is that he owns or works with.
Right.
To end there and then fly back without having to stop somewhere else. The guy is incredible. I mean, how many places, just the amount of time I've known him, I could name just about every continent. Anywhere from Germany to London to China to Japan to Taiwan. Go AP.
Instead of where's Waldo, where's AP?
Yeah, where's AP? It'll be fun. I know he got rid of his – he doesn't do much driving. The car he had, he goes, I couldn't have that car for Hatter to drive, so he went out and bought another car. He bought a new car. It's down there waiting for me. He did that before the COVID hit.
Oh, wow.
He goes, I can't have Hatter seen in that other thing. It's a nice-looking car. I think it's called an Aqua.
Oh, wow.
It looks like a Supra. Remember the Celica Supras?
Yeah, I had one actually in '86.
Okay, they sort of look like that. So it looks like that.
I love that car.
They were dinosaurs. I had one also. It was my little brother's, and I just sort of inherited it while I was changing, buying another car. Yeah, they're cool cars. They're cool cars. Dinosaurs. Very little maintenance.
And really nice engines.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like those Toyota and Datsun trucks, the first ones.
Uh-huh.
The little ones, they're still on the road. I mean,
The Datsun 210?
That's what my ex-wife had. She drove a white Audi. She drove a white Audi sedan. Beautiful car. She's just a rich girl, blonde hair. And I told my buddies, it was a freshman year, I saw her standing at the student store, and I told my buddies one day I was going to marry that chick, and they laughed at me.
And then you married her.
Little did they know, I did. But when we first got married, her parents hated me. I don't think there was anybody that was going to be good enough for Stacy's dad, little girl. Yeah. And they absolutely hated me. I mean, they didn't like me at all, especially Mill, her father. And so when we got married, she had a Datsun that's what she ended up driving because they took the Audi away. She had a Datsun B210.
Yeah.
Little piece of crap car. It was bad.
Yeah.
And it took me years before I realized. She goes, well, when I married you, they took the Audi. Oh, God. And they were this is my rant, my lifetime rant. Every holidays we had to go over Thanksgiving and Christmas over to her parents. Understood. I love my wife. I will do this for you because it was miserable for me. I'll tell you why. I would walk in, football is on the TV. I walk in, I see it. I get a pop a beer, go back, walk in, just as he walks over and shuts it off. We don't watch sports. So for 20 years, I didn't get to watch football on Thanksgiving or Christmas. And it was on when I walked in.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
They just knew I was a jock and that I loved football. They took it away. That's all it was. Yeah, nothing beats the day that they invited us over for dinner. I didn't want to go, but she wanted to, so I'll go. We walk in the door. TV goes off. They sit on the love seat. We're on the couch, and they say, well, what we want to do is dissolve the marriage. Stacy can move home with us, and you can move back with your parents. But what? I stood up, and I said, you can stay here if you want. I walked out, got in the car. I was going to head home. You got to be kidding me. She got in the car. She goes, I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
Wow.
Well, now you do. And I'll tell you what, I got the last laugh because when Mill passed away, God bless his soul, I was still married to his daughter. So, Mill, all that hate was for nothing. And it was funny because I was an electrician when I met Stacy, and I worked, you know, it was a seasonal, but I rarely got laid off in the wintertime. So
right.
I had my job. I had my job most of the time. But I wasn't good enough for her parents. When I went looking for – when we had our first son, I needed insurance. I wanted an insurance package from my employer. So I went looking for a better job. I got on with the fire department by a stroke of luck.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I'm a good son. They're treating me totally different.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not buying this. Yeah. So now you like me. Now I'm okay because of the job? Wow, okay.
Yeah.
They were the Joneses. They were the type to have somebody down the street have one, and they got to get one better or do one just like it.
Yeah.
They were well off. They owned a jewelry store. They were well off, but did not live that way. I got to give it to them. They did not live like they had money, but they had money.
Cool.
I should have taken that more serious. Well, I remember the day that if you marry him, we're writing you out of the will. And she said, fine, write me out of the will. Oh, God, Stacy. Thank you. I think. But you know, and what was funny thing is, all my girlfriends, their parents loved me. I got along with all my freaking. The one that I fell in love with and wanted to marry, that they absolutely hated me. And my folks didn't like my parents didn't like them much either. They say, "No, I'll be that way." But I was looking for a. We could play
you
a song.
You were looking for a song.
I was. I don't know what got distracted. Okay, here we go. We got all sorts of Beatles. There's My Guitar Gently Weeps, Love Me Do, 8 Days a Week, Uncle Albert, Ticket to Ride.
Oh, no. Not Rita.
Hello, Rita, meet a maid.
Yeah, no. She keeps in a jar. All the lonely people. All the lonely people.
Where do they all come from? That's off of Abbey Road. All the lonely people. Eleanor Rigby.
Yep.
Let's see if it's here. Day in the life is that I woke up, got out of bed, walked the room, crossed my head, went upstairs and drank a cup. Somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
That's a great song.
Oh, here's Eleanor Rigby.
I think that song is amazing.
Then we're gonna play.
Look at all the lonely people. Picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father Mackenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walked from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
Eleanor Rigby. There's a funny story about that. They were always asked, who was Eleanor Rigby? The way I heard it was it's just a name they picked.
Mm-hmm.
But from out of Liverpool, I think it was, there's a town, a nearby town that's somebody had told him there's a grave up there of Eleanor Rigby, this lady.
What?
So I don't know which is true. John, at one time, if you have an interview with John after the, I would say, between 68 to anywhere after, if you remember, he was quoted – about Jesus.
Uh-huh.
People said that he said something. It's not what he said. It's not what he said. It's not what he meant. But people pulled apart.
They supposedly said that they were bigger than Jesus Christ.
No, that's not what he said. No, he said, you would think we were as big as Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's all he said, because of the crowds.
Right.
And they tweaked it into something else. Now, after that, John Lennon was bitter about the media and interviews.
Yeah.
He had no problem giving the interviews, but anything he said, either it made no sense or it was a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't take a lot of the information that Lennon did in interviews as gospel, because you look at the songs he was writing. When they
right.
when they depict every song that he wrote had something to do with drugs and
right.
that kind
like
of thing.
Like listening to this guy supposedly LSD.
Yeah, so he knew everything he said or did was going to be microanalyzed by the media. So he started writing nonsensical lines. And there's a lot of songs that you can see that. Green Onion, you know, a lot of them. So
number nine. I hate that song.
Yeah, number nine.
Number
so
nine.
Long.
Number nine.
Yeah.
Number nine.
That's a white album. Yeah. I think Bob Dylan, he just quit interview. He didn't give an interview for 40 years for the same reason. He was asked the same question over and over and over and over. He was asked, what does it feel like to be the voice of a generation? I'll tell you what, he was 19 years old. and he didn't know how to answer that. The question, he was also asked, well, how come you used this line? Or this word, and this because they were microanalyzing everything Dylan did. He goes, because it rhymed. That's what he said. That was like the last thing he said. And then for 40 years, he didn't give any interviews till the was it Roger Mudd was the interview that he agreed to Bob Dylan, but. He was just a songwriter that was trying to be creative and.
Uh-huh.
Do the best he can, and all of a sudden he's put on this pedestal as the voice of a generation, and the generation was the 60s. I mean, that was a volatile time. He said he didn't have time for the crap, because now when he quit giving interviews, the media turned on him.
Uh-huh.
Just like Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for Green Bay. The media got into his family business and started to ask him the relationship he had with his brother, one of his brothers, and his parents, and he got pissed. How dare you go to my parents and go? You know, that's over the line. So he quit giving interviews. He hated these freaking guys. Well, the minute you do that, you're now the villain. And if you notice. Aaron Rodgers was not the golden boy anymore for the last several years. And you got to ask you why. It's because he wouldn't give interviews. So that's the way the media will punish you.
It's like
Brady. He's got the best attitude. Brady is the nicest guy in the world. He has no problem playing the game, but you got to play the game. And there's a lot of athletes Larry Bird, same way. He got tired of being asked the same question over and over. In fact, you see some of those old interviews. Look at the expression on Bird's face. He's going, you really asked me that? Jesus Christ. But if you don't give interviews, the media will turn on you. They'll do everything they can to tear you down.
Yeah.
I think Belichick has the right thing. When that was all going around where they were trying to pit, they were going up to a player on any given team and saying, hey, did you know your lineman said this about you? And they would tweak it or just give part of the conversation
right.
of what he said. And they would do
yeah.
it. Then the guy would get pissed. And then the next thing you have problems with your team. And Belichick saw that coming, and he said, no more media, my spring training, no more practice, no more media anywhere, because it was disrupting the – it was back with Tony Gonzalez. Yeah, the Tony Gonzalez days of the – and the what was the guy that wanted to just – he quit football just to smoke pot, played for the Miami Dolphins. I can't remember his name. But, yeah, media, it was way too much. I think that's when Cam Newton came out of the closet. That,
oh.
Yeah. Yeah, media's got too much power. I don't know where that came with the days of Walter Cronkite are over.
Yeah.
Media is not a...
Well, now everything's internet.
Well, there are a lot of people that quit, like CNN. A lot of those anchor women and men, they quit. They said, I can't take this yellow journalism. It's McCarthyism is what it is.
Uh-huh.
If you don't agree with them, they will just try to destroy you.
Yeah.
With lies and everything. It's just like they'll retract it. They'll put it on the back page. Well, nobody sees the retraction. It was on the front page the day before where they lied about it. Then they retract it. Nobody sees the retraction.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would hope. What I don't get, and I'll say this, and then we'll go on. I don't get how it's like CNN had worse ratings than Nickelodeon at any given time. But the dude that used to own it, he was willing to drive it down into the to nothing. I mean, that's a multi-million dollar corporation. But somebody paid these guys. And I don't get it. What do you think you get at the end of all this? You're doing somebody's bidding for them. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to turn on you just like they did to everybody else.
It's crazy.
I don't know. It is. It was better. I remember the Walter Cronkite and David Brinkley.
Yeah, yeah.
They were honest journalists. They didn't let their political views show one way or the other. They reported the news as the news was, and that's the way it should be.
Yep.
You know, let me rephrase that. That's the way it's got to be. I don't trust anything the media says anywhere at all. None of it. you can't afford to.
Yeah, that's true.
I saw Hearst added there. I was the Walrus. Saw Hearst added there. Love me do. Martha, my dear. Oh, darling. Strawberry Fields.
The Fool on the Hill was a cool song. That was about George Harrison's dog.
Fool on the Hill, was it?
Yeah.
Are you sure that wasn't his uncle? Was you sure it wasn't his uncle?
Yes. It was about his dog. He was watching the dog playing on the hill, and that's what he wrote the song about.
Ah. Okay.
And the other one that you mentioned, A Day in the Life, that was... Paul McCartney wrote
Paul's
half
dead.
That song, and
Paul's dead.
He wrote half that song, and Lennon wrote half that song, and they couldn't figure out endings to it, so they mashed the two of them together.
Well, that's the way they wrote most of their songs. They took the melodies from either Paul or John, and the lyric chorus, and they pieced all of them. When they broke up, that's why. They were always Lennon and McCartney songs. Everything they wrote was Lennon and McCartney. When they broke up, they had to get together and decide who owned what song. And it's funny because they have the interviews, not together, but they have an interview with McCartney and then an interview with Lennon about that. And I think the best one is Lennon when he go, damn, I should have kept that song, because they had to say. One song at a time. And if you know the Beatles catalog, you're talking hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds of songs. So they had to go one at a time and decide who owned what. And that, like back in the day, I think it was John was more a lyricist, and Paul was the catch, the hook.
Yeah.
I might be wrong. It might be the other way around, but that's how they created most all their songs. It was already written melodies and such. When they got together, they would find two that sort of went together. They sort of meshed it together. But it's worth seeing those interviews. Seeing those interviews where they, especially when Lennon talks about having to split the songs up, decide who's he always goes, "Damn, I wish we would have kept that song. I should have kept that song."
Yeah.
And then
hindsight
now,
is 2020, as they say.
And then Michael Jackson bought the library.
Oh my God, that was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, the copyright time had it was just to own the library was more of a like a statue of the corner. It really didn't mean he didn't make any money off it. He just owned the rights to it. Doesn't mean he got paid when every song got played. It wasn't that kind of a.
He didn't get royalties. No,
he didn't. No, he didn't. But he owned. I guess however that wording is said illegally, and I know that that's changed. That's changed many times since the Moody Blues trial in the '60s, where that one band member wanted royalty rights to songs he didn't write, and somebody had to do it. It just happened to be the Moody Blues. That was being sued, and they won. Ben didn't get what he wanted, and he shouldn't have. You know, he should have embraced the fact that he was able to tour with the Moody Blues and play
right.
And be freaking happy. No, he wanted a piece of the pie that he didn't bake. You know.
Yeah.
But it laid the groundwork for anybody else that would try that because precedence was set. You're not going to get anything if you didn't write the song, so shut the hell up, dude. a lot of the groups use session artists to record, and then they had their regular a different band when they traveled, and they're touring.
Yeah.
And I was upset. I didn't know that Knights in White Satin. They didn't make a penny off of.
Oh, wow.
Didn't make a dime. He didn't make a penny off of it, and it's just like who did Money and Crystal Blue Persuasion? The original Crystal Blue Persuasion. I'll get it. Anyway, he got signed by a record company that was owned by the mob.
Oh, they kept it right.
He said, Chloe, stop, I got a cat tearing shit up. Knock it off. Sorry, I'm sorry, guys. I forgot what I was saying. Get out of here. God damn cat, tearing shit up.
Corey Haynes.
Tommy James and the Shondells.
Uh-huh.
When he did My Baby Does the Hanky Panky, that was his first song. A DJ heard it, made some copies, and went around to other radio stations and sort of did the press thing. Long story short, Tommy James was invited to New York to talk to some recording studios about being signed. So he shows up in New York, goes up to Capitol Records. They don't know. Sorry, we're going to pass. Okay, so they go to RCA. No, we're going to pass. And he goes, well, you guys invited me here. What the hell's going on? Well, it was Roulette. I think it was Roulette Productions. Was owned by the mob. They went around and said, "You do not sign Tommy James. You hear me?" You know, so they were threatened. by the mob. So he went to the then to the he had no idea it was they were owned by the mob. So he went and signed with this record company who he I don't know how many years, but he didn't make a dime, and neither did the band for years.
Yeah.
And he said, well, he said he was lucky. He said he probably would have killed himself having that much money at that time. But yeah, then he was able to tell the story when the mobster either died or went to prison. So now it's how he's. There was supposed to be a book or a movie deal about it. I don't know if that's ever going to turn now. But yeah, and the same with Nights in White Satin. You mean freaking Justin didn't make a dime off that song because of the contract? You know, a lot of those bands didn't make any money. Doobie Brothers, Steely Dan, some of the early stuff, Deep Purple. They would do anything just to get known as a rock band and tour. They didn't look down the road and realize they are now contractually having to give them two albums a year for how many years and not make a dime, and they are roped into touring to promote it.
Right.
I guess the Backstreet Boys, was that the one with Timberlake in? Was that
yeah,
the Backstreet Boys? With Timberlake?
I think so.
He said the same thing. Those kids were not paid anything for the entire time they were. Some fat old rich white guy made all the money from them.
Yep.
They didn't make anything. But it was people like Pat Benatar, Joe Bonamassa, that changed that. Pat Benatar, I think, was the first. She was approached by all sorts of the record companies or whatever to sign with them, but you got to get rid of Neil. Well, Neil was her husband, was the lead guitarist,
right.
And he said, and said, we will put you up, we'll spend all this money, we'll pay you this much, you know, Pat Bennett. She said no. So they tried to say, well, then screw you, you won't get another recording. You know, they're going to try blackballing her. Well, she went on her way, and she was good enough to where, I don't know what label she signed with, but with her husband. As a manager, beat the companies. Didn't sign that contract that most do, because Pat Benatar was happy the way she was in life. She needed not to be rich and famous. She liked to perform. Joe Bonamassa was another one recently that could have signed. He could have went anywhere and got signed. But he knew the pitfalls, so he created his own company. And they were trying to make sure that he didn't make it. But Joe Bonamassa was good enough to where everybody wanted to play with Joe Bonamassa.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's and he's going to, there's guys like him and Pat Benatar and her husband that beat the recording studios, that it can happen. Do not sign with those guys, you know. That must have been. You'd think that all these guys are all rich. Well, some of them were. The Stones were. The Beatles were. But I'm sure Clapton made a lot of money, too. But, you know, like people like the Tower of Power or Doobie Brothers, Steely Dan, I don't think at first they made any money. Yeah. It's a hard thing. If you want to make it, got to sign here. Otherwise,
and been working like a dog.
Should be sleeping. Okay, Uncle Albert.
Hard Monday's night.
I gauged all guitarists by the way they played as my guitar gently weeps, because they all do. It's easy to find, but you can say how did they play it? That's how I gauged. Jeff Healy was an outstanding. Get off of there! Oh, I was going to be yelling. Stupid cat. Yeah, I knew some guys. I grew up with Jeff Watson. I don't know if you know who Night Ranger is. Night Ranger.
Yeah, I know Night Ranger.
Yeah, Steve Watson. Jeff Watson was, he grew up around the corner from me.
Sister Christian.
Yeah, Sister Christian, yeah. Rockin' America, yeah. Yeah, that band, a couple guys came from Damn Yankees. One guy came from not Mott the Hoople. Damn Yankees. So that, anyway. Jeff, what school was him in fourth grade, all through high school and such. And next thing you know, he's a rock and roll star. I don't know. I haven't talked to Jeff in years. And when I do talk to him, it's not about his business. But I wonder, he owns a big house down in Mill Valley, which is north of San Francisco, rich area. But I don't know if he made a whole lot of money. He married a shipping magnate's daughter. So there was Jeff's got no money problems as far as his career. But it's a sad thing when you see these guys. You wonder why some of them aren't happy. They off themselves or they disappear. So, yeah, that's why. That's why they work so hard and they see the rainbow and they're on the right of it and then realize you've just been taken. For the next 10 years, you're not going to make anything because contractually you're stuck. But I think that was the brilliance of Tom Petty. I think Tom Petty was another one that busted the recording studios. Those guys, the Heartbreakers, they followed him religiously. Tom Petty was a smart dude as far as business. And he knew what not to give up. That's what a guy would have liked to hang with. Well, let's see. We're at 3 minutes. 3 minutes to go. We could play one song. There you go. Eight days a week. Let me see what we got here. We got Bee Gees. Alone. How can you mend a broken heart? That's a good song. I started a joke.
Oh,
that was Robin. That was the golden voice, Robin. Those are some really tragic words. Should be dancing. Billy Joel Royal. Cherry Hill Park. It's an actual park. Do you know where Cherry Hill Park is? You're on the East Coast. No. Cherry Hill Park. I thought it was in, maybe it's not New Jersey. Maybe it's further down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Cherry Hill is an area in New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Cherry Hill, Mary Hill would go play in Cherry Hill Park. And this is why.
Mary Hill used to hang out in Cherry Hill Park. The game she played lasted all day to way after dark. All the girls, they criticized her, but all the guys just idolized her, 'cause Mary Hill was such a thrill after dark in Cherry Hill Park.
Okay, so we're gonna move. We're running out of time.
Mary Hill,
we're gonna play this through.
Love to ride on the merry-go-round. All the guys got eager eyes watching Mary go round. In the daytime, Mary Hill was a teaser. Come the night, she was such a pleaser. Mary Hill was such a thrill after dark. Okay. She went away to play a one-man game and said,
Hill Park, Berry Hill. Remember it now?
No.
That song will stick in your head, my friend.
Yeah. The beginning beat sounded like the Beatles. It's getting better. You got to admit, it's getting better.
Oh, I guess so. I would, yeah, a little bit. Well,
but,
Rocketeer, thanks for hanging. I want to thank you for hanging with me tonight.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, and we'll do it again. I'll let you know when the next music one is, the next music show.
All right, dude.
There's a couple of people I want to do. I'll have to check it out with Deborah. So thank you, everybody, for listening or going to listen. This is ATOV, a team of voices radio. I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Rack. Thank you, Rack.
Take care. Good night.
Yeah, we'll see you guys later. Good night, everybody.